this week on the Inside Flap.
There were decades upon decades of poverty and hardship, and then once the casino opened in the 90s for our tribe, that money was able to be dispersed and helped out with education and home housing and healthcare. But then you also have the flip side, which is something I kind of focused on more in my previous novel, Sisters of the Lost Nation, where that money can also, of course, be used in ways that aren't as wholesome, let's say.
She throws both fists up in the air and what? She goes, "Aren't you excited about the big event?"
What?
Just like that, with this huge smile on her face. And I'm like, I don't know.
What
I don't
is
know
the event?
What the big event is. She goes, and again, "It's sold out, don't you know?" I said, I'm sorry. She goes, "Oh, I got a feeling we can squeeze you in, though. Why don't you go on in up to the counter?"
Is this woman
and
insane?
See, I think she is.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the table from me is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. Howdy. And welcome. What?
I don't know. I sometimes wonder if I need a new opener.
Oh, a new opener. I mean, we switch up our walk-up songs.
Yeah.
We've had the same jingle the whole time.
I might, when Andrew's here, switch it up a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to it. This is an inside chat version of the Inside Flap. And for those of you new to the show, just wondering what the heck the inside chat of the Inside Flap is, it is basically a truncated version of our show. Sans
book
this
reviews.
Guy. Sans
Andrew
Down. Sans that guy and Sans
book reviews.
Right. Although we do recommend the author that joins us every week.
And, usually. Just kidding.
Yeah. We got a good one this
There's
week.
There's a good one this week.
Good one this week as we are joined by Nick Medina, authors Ooh. Of Sisters of the Lost Nation. He's got a new book out now that is titled Indian Burial Ground, which I really enjoyed, and Laura and I had a fun chat with Nick, and we'll have that for you in just a second. But first, shout out to student Dexter from my period six class. Shout out Dexter.
What a great name.
Dexter came up to me and told me, I've been going through all your podcasts. I've been listening through all your podcasts.
Oh,
I'm
no.
like, really? And Dexter says, "Yeah, I want to be your number one fan." I said, "Great. Well, keep them coming." I said, "Are you enjoying them?" And Dexter says,
"What did he say?"
No, Dexter said, "Yeah, I'm enjoying them." And he was up to the episode about the sweat. He said, "I'm listening to the sweat."
Oh,
remember when I was on the exercise book?
Yeah. Yeah.
So shout out to Dexter.
I always feel embarrassed when I think back because I don't always remember, like, what did I talk about? What
right,
did I
yeah,
say?
Yeah, yeah.
It's always something just embarrassing about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's usually what it is. I mean, those are the best stories.
Apologies, Dexter.
Here is something for you. Went today up, now not too long ago, I got myself a little pass to where I teach at East High School in Denver. Is maybe a 15-minute walk away from the Denver Botanic Gardens. And I have
a nice park, too.
And we're right 1 minute away from Nice City Park. Nice places to walk to, nice place to walk, especially when you have a couple
of
periods
park.
Off.
For those of you who aren't from here, it's called City Park. It's not a nice city park.
Oh, you're
the
right.
The actual name is
City
Park.
City Park. Capital C, itty, capital P, arc. City Park. So I walked over to the Botanic Gardens today. And first of all, it annoys me that I got a membership. And I literally got my membership on my phone, did it on my phone as I was walking around the park one day, purchased it. And every time I go in there, it comes with a little QR code that they scan. And you think they would just a little bloop and I can walk right in. No, every time I have to go up to the counter, they have to do the bloop. They have to print out a ticket.
What?
Hand me the ticket. and then I have to show the ticket to the person at the door every time.
Why are they
drives
doing
me
that?
absolutely nuts.
That
you think
such a waste
a
of
botanic
paper.
Gardens would have a little a little green thumb?
You are a man who still prints out plane tickets, and it annoys Sylvia and I.
Well, I've stopped.
So I'm surprised. Stopped on the them. Last return flight.
I don't print them out. We just, when we go to the airport.
But yeah, but we never have them on our phone like the other families, well, and we always feel like we're from 1830s.
It's just because when you go to the airport and we have to check a bag, it's easier just to print it all out right there.
It feels embarrassing.
Well, yeah.
So I'm surprised that outrages you. Actually, I shouldn't be surprised.
Well, that outrages me, and then this outraged me today as I walk up. Now, before I even enter the area where you do the little bloop and then you get to go into the gardens, it's like a little, it's like gift shop and then the counter.
I know exactly how
and then
it goes,
there's a
yeah.
ticketing line. Before I even enter there, this woman stops me on the sidewalk.
Oh.
She goes, "Do you have your ticket?" I said, and she's very excited. She's like a picture like your.
Like a volunteer.
Like a docent at a, very excited.
Yeah.
"You have your ticket."
I've had a couple clients who are volunteers there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe this is a client of yours. She's probably, in her mid-70s.
Oh, no.
I said, "No, I do not have a ticket." And I just puffed my chest up a little bit. I said, "I am a member."
Oh.
He said, "Well, special event today. You need a ticket. It's sold out." I said, "It's sold out." This is 9:15 in the morning. 9:15 in the morning, maybe 9:25.
On a Monday.
On a Monday. Special event. You need a ticket. I said, "I don't have I didn't know there was anything going on. Well, maybe if you check." This is what she said. She starts scolding me. "Maybe if you checked our website, you would know it's a special event." And then she gets a little closer to me. She throws, I wish I was making this up. I'm not making it. She throws both fists up in the air and she goes, "Aren't you excited about the big event?"
What?
Just like that, with this huge smile on her face. And I'm like, I don't know.
What
I don't
is
know
the event?
What the big event is. She goes, "And again, it's sold out, don't you know?" I said, I'm sorry. She goes, "Oh, I got a feeling we can squeeze you in, though. Why don't you go on in up to the counter?"
Is this woman
and
insane?
I think she is.
There's no special event.
I said, "She's just maybe we can get you in. Go on in." And that's what I'm thinking at this point. I'm like, this is
There's
just some
no
woman,
special
a woman
event.
On Quaaludes who's out of her mind. I don't know, from the 70s. So I walk up to the counter. And again, the woman behind the counter, "Do you have a ticket?" "No, I don't have a ticket. I'm a member, though." She goes, "It's sold out." I said, "But I'm a member." I said, "I didn't know." And again,
at this point, are you looking around to see what type
I'm
of person?
I'm looking all around. I don't see any signs for any special event.
I know, but are people flooding in?
No, it's 9:25.
I don't understand.
There are a few more. There are a few people women. Few women with strollers milling around.
Yeah, but they always.
But they're always, looking for something to do with their babies. I'm like, "I don't know." And she goes, "We can get you in, though. We can get you in." Like they're doing me a favor. I'm like, "Okay, great." So she goes to the bloop, bloop.
What? I'm excited. Who are you going to meet?
All right. What's going on?
I don't know why, but maybe I had a thought that James Taylor, I don't know if he's still with us. I thought maybe James Taylor might be in there.
No, James Taylor would be nice. I'm thinking
I don't know why I thought
maybe
that.
Free food. Yeah. I'm thinking it's probably some speakers, some
maybe,
special
maybe Polis, the
event.
Governor.
You know, I could learn about some of the plants. Maybe, our friend Robert Justice, wrote a book about the corpse flower. Maybe
dignitaries.
Yeah, sure. Special event. So she bloop, prints out the ticket, of course. And I said, what's the special event? She goes, "Oh, it's a free day."
What?
First of all, if it's a free day, why is there all this nonsense about it being sold out and I need a ticket? No, they weren't joking. It was a free day.
But I don't understand.
I guess the Denver Botanic Gardens is so wildly popular, they can't handle the hordes.
It's Earth Day.
And massive. Oh, today was Earth Day. But why just let everybody in? And then at a certain point, if you get too many people, you just say, "Hey, you're going to have to wait." No, you had to get online and reserve a spot. But of course, I don't know.
That's
they let me in anyway.
Event?
That's the special. Just say it's a free day today. At that, you don't have to. They kept
it's
going on
day,
and on and on
day.
With the special event.
Wow. Why did the woman shake her fists in the air?
I don't know. Are you excited about the special event? Right in my face. With this weird smile on her face.
I'm honestly, I'm kind of speechless right
now. I'm flummoxed. I was completely flummoxed by the whole ordeal.
Huh.
No idea.
Well, I feel like...
Why don't you tell me it?
Here's
hey,
the thing.
It's Earth
Denver
Day.
Is a it's a mid-sized city.
Sure,
right?
It is. Yeah,
but
they
Denver,
go around number 20 on the Nielsen
Denver
ratings.
Also feels like a small town sometimes.
It's a cow town. You can.
I don't know if
you
it's
often
a cow
see,
town.
Well, you can often see tumbleweeds blowing.
But I feel like
you
Denver
can smell the cows.
Sometimes still
Greeley.
Thinks it's a small town.
Oh, sure.
Even though it's a mid-sized city.
Right. Maybe.
I feel like that's a little small town mentality.
It is a small town. Are you excited about the big event?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, the free day?
Huh.
That I might not have even gotten in, even though I'm a
I
member.
I feel like Chicago, New York, LA, they're not throwing their fists in the air about a free day.
No, they're not.
In a big event.
And I was, why would I be excited about a free day when I'm a member?
I don't know.
Every day is a free day for me. I get 365 free days, and now I got to get
also,
a ticket?
You got to look on the website when you're a member before you want to go?
Shaming me for not looking on the website.
Huh.
And the whole time also, she didn't tell me when I was at the counter, I was worried that I was going to get, they never said it's a free ticket. She just kept saying, you got to get a ticket.
And you're thinking, great, that's going to be $35.
And I'm thinking, man, this might cost me some coin.
Yeah.
As a member. Coin. Some shekels. But you know, some beautiful tulips. I saw at the gardens here. I'll show you a nice picture. We'll put up a picture on our
visual
Facebook page.
People are listening to us.
Well, they can go. This is a way to drive traffic to the Facebook page.
Dexter, are you on Facebook?
Dexter is not on Facebook. Dexter is a ninth grader.
Oh, maybe Dexter could leave us a review. Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. All right. Yeah, that's worth putting up on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you scroll, there's a couple of, but I don't. Something's wrong with my camera right now. So. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, if you're in town, check out the Denver Botanic Gardens. Just don't go on a free day unless you get online and get your tickets.
Man.
Yeah.
You know, it's odd. That's odd.
It is strange.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what else is a little bit strange in a good way. That's Nick Medina's new book, which is titled Indian Burial Ground. This is an excellent tale, extremely atmospheric of indigenous people. It is part mystery and part horror, driven by the characters that feature tribal mythology and really showcase the generational trauma that exists, including alcoholism and suicide. So at the beginning of the book, we meet Noemi. She is in her late 30s, looking to get off the reservation for something better when she finds out that her boyfriend, by all accounts, a nice guy, seemingly leading a happy life, she finds out that she's told he has committed suicide. Now, Noemi finds it hard to believe this and starts kind of probing around and digging into the circumstances surrounding his death. At the same time, her long-lost Uncle Louis comes back to the reservation after being gone for decades, and we go back and flashback to his youth as a teenage boy struggling to keep his own family together with an alcoholic mother. There are strange and weird horror-driven and supernatural events going on the reservation as well. And there appears to be some kind of evil spirit nearby. So I really enjoyed this book. Check it out, Indian Burial Ground. And here now, talking about that book and other things, this is Nick Medina. Well, Nick, thanks for joining us. Absolutely loved your new book, Indian Burial Ground. Now, this is a tale of grave robbing, rattlesnakes, and alligators. Nick, what was it that inspired you to write this book?
Well, this book actually started with an article that I had read. Geez, I think it might have been back in 2012 or 2015, somewhere in that time frame. I can't remember, but it was about this young boy who supposedly sat up in his coffin and spoke. He asked for water. And that article always lived in my head, and I knew I wanted to do something with it. And so that was the first part of this novel. And so, the things you mentioned, the rattlesnakes and all that stuff, all that came in, a lot of that was influenced by the setting, which You know, the book takes place in Louisiana on a fictional Indian reservation that I created, and you know, it's to me, it's its own unique world. I love exploring it and having all those spooky elements come out, and I've been having a real fun time developing it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, so in a horror book, and this is a horror, I would describe, I think you would, we can agree that this is a horror book, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this one leans a lot more into horror than the previous one, Sisters of the Lost Nation. But yeah, a lot of horror, mythological stuff, you know, native folklore mixed in there, all the stuff that I love.
Awesome. So in a horror book, now, which this is, one thing you always want to include are some horrific images that will really strike fear in the heart of the reader. And early on, Nick, you deliver a doozy. You got a rattlesnake, which is bad. Now, bad enough, you're going to bring a rattlesnake into the book. But then we find out the rattlesnake is dead. He's got like a dented head. He's all bloodied. And then all of a sudden, the rattlesnake, clearly dead, has slithered away. Now, Nick, I'm seeing this in my nightmares. Was that, did you give yourself a little high five when you came up with this image? Is that the kind of thing you're looking for when you're crafting a horror novel?
Yeah, definitely. You know, anything that's going to kind of worm its way in and, you know, give you a sleepless night later on is, you know, something that I'm looking for. So yeah, a lot of those little things, the rattlesnake, even though it's not a huge part of the book, but it adds to the feel and the tone. And you know, there's other things in there as well. There's a dead woodpecker. I don't know if you want to talk about that one. Really creepy. The dead woodpecker coming by and, you know, trying to hammer its way into your home during the night. Yeah, those little things, you know, they creep me out.
Where did you grow up? Where did you grow up?
I actually grew up in the Chicago area. I was born in Chicago and went back and forth kind of between the city and the suburbs. My parents divorced, so you know, they were located in different spots. But yeah, I've always been in Illinois, northern Illinois.
You know, you got really captured the South really well, so I was just curious to know.
Oh yeah, well, I'm part of the Tunica Biloxi tribe of Louisiana, and my grandmother was actually born on the reservation down there, and so we've visited several times, and I try to go down to the powwow. We have an annual powwow in May, and so that's what I really based the setting of this story on. Even in the previous book that I wrote, Sisters of the Lost Nation, it deals a lot with a hotel and casino, and all of that is really based on the tribe that I belong to. You know, they have a casino that is just like that, where they have this man-made bayou in the lobby, and so there's actual alligators in the lobby. And the alligators are a big part of our tribe, so I wanted to incorporate that into my fictional tribe as well.
Great.
You ever wrestle an alligator, Nick? Be honest.
No, I'm not that crazy. But okay. My dad actually used to work, because they do alligator shows at the hotel. And my dad used to work as a part of the alligator handlers. He would feed them and take part in the shows, but never wrestled them as far as I know.
What do you feed an alligator, Nick?
They eat chicken. Chicken. Yeah, they raw chicken. They'll just hold it out and they'll dangle it, and the alligators will jump and grab it. And yeah,
nice. That's funny. So you do mention a powwow, and talk about the significance of the powwow in the book a lot. Mm-hmm. What is it? You know, what is it about the powwow that is so meaningful?
Well, the powwow really is a communal celebration, and it welcomes you know, tribes from across the country, or even, you know, other countries such as Canada, and it also welcomes people who are not native to come and join in with the celebration. So it's a very communal event. It's also a spiritual event. Features obviously a lot of dancing, and those dances reflect specific beliefs. They might also be part of you know, each tribe has its own culture and its own you know, entities and things like that. So when they're performing these dances, they might be in honor of a certain god or a certain spirit, is the better word, not god. But they're also performed for competition, performed for fun. So yeah, it's just a great event for everyone to come together and, you know, just embrace one another. You know, it's a place where everyone's welcome. You know, you leave all the negativity behind and you just celebrate.
That's great. Even you, the city boy, they welcome you back with open
arms. Everyone's welcome.
This guy from Chicago.
Right, yeah. We got the Chicago guy coming
down.
They
have you know, open dances, so you know if you went down there too, you could join in on the open.
Oh, dance. Wow! Okay, yeah, all right.
For everybody,
that's awesome. That's great.
So I have a question too. So the people in this book make up the Dakota people, which is a fictional tribe. And I was kind of curious, I'm assuming, but maybe I'm wrong, that you kind of base this on the tribe that you were just talking about, your Louisiana tribe. Was it a big decision for you to just decide to go fictional? Was it something that you're like, oh, I'm just definitely making this up?
Yeah, I wanted to keep it fictional. And that was really because of the first book that I wrote, Sisters of the Lost Nation, because that book deals with some really heavy stuff, you know, sex trafficking and things like that. And I didn't want to saddle any one tribe with that issue, even though it's a very prevalent issue and a lot of tribes are dealing with it. I didn't want to say, hey, this is, you know, I didn't want to put that on any tribe. So I went with the fictional route for that reason. And also it gives me a lot more creative freedom just to do what I wanted. I wanted to build my own world and, you know, create my own reservation, even though it's influenced by my tribe. I wanted to, you know, just expand on it and have the freedom to do what I wanted. And also the word Dakota, you know, it comes from the Sioux. It's a word that means friend of all. So I thought, you know, I could create this tribe and have it be really, really inclusive. And I think it's worked out really well. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback based on that. And it also allowed me to bring in, because I like to use a lot of native mythology and folklore.
Yes. So
I'm able to pull from different tribes and kind of combine it and use it in ways that suit whatever story I'm working on.
Yeah, I was wondering, because you do have like a creation story that Louis tells Naomi. And so that's just something that you, Nick Medina, kind of created. Yeah,
there's
that's cool.
Pieces of that are inspired by my tribe as well, with the alligators. You know, the basis of the origin story is that the alligators allowed the Dakota people to walk on land. And that's similar to the Tunica Biloxi tribe. So I used that as the inspiration, but then I expanded on it and I took it in my own direction.
Do you get like other members of your tribe, members of the community to, you know, read your manuscripts beforehand to kind of get them to look at
I haven't asked anyone from my tribe to read it. I keep it mostly to my writing circle and the people that I'm close to. And I don't have anyone from the tribe really who looks anything over for me.
Too many cooks are gonna. Yeah, you know, we don't want that. That's funny. Now, you know, another horrific image that recurs throughout the book is this idea of grave robbing, which is bad enough, you know, when the graves get robbed for artifacts, but you take it a step further and, you know, bones have been stolen. I mean, it's pretty much hard to come up with a worse crime than that, isn't it, Nick?
Yeah, and part of that was also inspired by an actual event that happened with the Tunica Biloxi tribe. The tribal cemetery had been defiled and people had dug up, or a person I should say had dug up what they called the Dakota treasure. Excuse me. Now the Tunica treasure, not the Dakota.
Okay,
treasure.
Yeah, there you go.
The Tunica treasure. And they had stolen, you know, a great number of artifacts from these graves. And it took a long time to get them back. And so I used that also as inspiration within the story. And, you know, the similar thing happens where you know, things were stolen. But yeah, like you mentioned, I took it even farther, had some bones get taken. And that tied into Sisters of the Lost Nation as well, because that story starts off with a ghost story, essentially, about graves that were dug up and the chief's skull was taken. And so then we find out in Indian burial ground who actually dug up those bones and why.
Now, something I was not aware of was the significance of the drum in Native culture and how the beating of the drum kind of represents the beating of the heart. Did you bang on any drums during the creation of this novel?
Not any literal drums, no, but sometimes I bang on my head or bang on my desk. You know, frustration as I'm trying to pull things out. But yeah, the drum is a very significant instrument. You know, its shape represents the earth, the roundness of it. And like you said, the beating of it mimics the beat of our own heartbeats and, you know, keeps us steady, whether in times of war or times of peace. And, you know, it just serves as a reminder that, you know, as long as we can still bang the drum, we're going to be okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Does that job like go to the when you're going to a powwow, like, is it the most the elite members who get to bang the drum for a powwow, or how does that work?
You know, I'm not sure about the ranking, to be honest. It might just be people anyway. Who devote themselves to learning the craft of music and performance. I know they take that seriously. There are actually, just like with the dancers who come to perform at the powwow, they have groups of musicians who come, and so there'll be, you know, maybe a dozen different groups around their own grand powwow drum, and they'll all be performing at the same time, and they'll also take solos as well. So yeah, it's a big part of the celebration.
Wow.
I bet that's something to see. I'd like to see that sometime.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You should check it out. I don't know about in your area if there are tribes near you, but
there are, for sure. Yeah, New Mexico.
Usually throughout the summer and everything, there's usually powwows that are open, you know, of course, to the public. And you know, I've traveled even like north of here in Wisconsin. I've gone to different powwows, and like I said, it's always a great communal celebration.
That's great.
Everyone's welcome.
You also mentioned in the earlier timeline of the novel a bingo hall they wanted to build to bring in money. Louis' grandfather, you know, kind of seemed wary of the riches that could come to the tribe. And I was kind of curious about your thoughts about the money, tremendous amount of money, I think, that the casinos bring in.
Yeah. You know, that's one of those things that can sometimes be a double-edged sword, because on one hand, these casinos and resorts can bring in, like you said, a great amount of money, and that money can be used for advancement of the tribe. It can be invested in different endeavors, and it can really help pick up the tribal members, especially if the tribe had been in poverty before, which is the case for a lot of tribes. Even with my own tribe, you know, there were decades upon decades of you know, poverty and hardship. And then once the casino opened in the 90s for our tribe, you know, that money was able to be dispersed and helped out with education and home housing and healthcare. But then you also have the flip side, which is something I kind of focused on more in my previous novel, Sisters of the Lost Nation, where that money can also, of course, be used in ways that aren't as wholesome, let's say. You know, it can lead to a lot of vices, drugs, or people just, you know, spending it without much thought, you know, just spending on cars or, you know, clothes or, you know, things that don't really help them in the long run. And then they end up in a similar situation where they've gone through all the money that they've received, and, you know, they're back in poverty and struggling once again. So it all comes down to, I really think it comes down to education. I think, you know, if a tribe is going to have something like that, like a casino, they really need to spend time also investing in the education of their members to help them realize how they can spend this money and how that money could be invested and how it can help perhaps turn their lives around so that it doesn't just get wasted.
It's so hard. I mean, as human beings, you know, when you get a big windfall like that,
especially if you've lived in poverty, if you've lived without for so long and then suddenly you have it, you want to enjoy it. You want to go out, you want to have fun, you want to have the things that you've seen other people have through you know, TV or whatever, movies. And it can be really tough to find that balance. But I think now especially tribes are more aware of that, and they are spending more time you know, educating their members. And there are management systems as well that are being put into place that really help the tribes as well.
Yeah.
Speaking of vices, you do make a point of bringing up the high suicide rate and alcohol problems that have affected Native Americans, and you do a nice job in the acknowledgments about and talking about that and pointing out places where, you know, you can get help. Was that, is that something that you really wanted to make sure to include in this novel?
Yeah, I like, I like when horror has you know, some sort of social issue that it's approaching. You know, I like when there's really a lot of thought behind it, and that it, it's not just there to you know, scare the audience or to give you a cheap thrill, but it's there to actually help maybe open your eyes and help you realize that there are these issues out there that exist and that people are actually struggling with. And I think this is something that actually relates to a lot of cultures and a lot of groups, and not just Native groups, because especially after the pandemic with mental health, we did see an uptick in suicide rates in many different cultural groups. And, you know, obviously it goes without saying that it's something that's absolutely horrible and heartbreaking, and it's something that you know, needs a lot of attention. And so, yeah, I wanted to shine a light on that and hopefully make it known that there is help out there and that there are other options. And, you know, hopefully this book will do some good. Just like with my previous one, you know, I've gotten a really strong response because a lot of people didn't know about the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls epidemic that's been going on for decades in the United States and Canada. And it was something that even I didn't have as much of an understanding of until I started researching that novel and really learning about the thousands of families who are suffering from having a loved one go missing. And so I hope with the work that I'm doing with these novels that it will do some good.
Yeah. And horror, I completely agree with you. It's such a great way to get a message across.
Yeah.
Because it really brings it home. I don't know. It somehow sinks into your like monkey mind, like, oh, okay, I get that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the great thing about horror, though, because it can stop you in your tracks. You know, it takes you firmly in its grasp, and right from the start, it's going to terrify you. But then you can see a little bit later on, once you get over that initial horror, you get to see what's actually behind it and that there are things that can be done to help and make changes.
As a reader, that's what I was going to ask too, Dave. As a reader, like as a young man, were you reading horror? Did you start out reading horror? Was that your first love or did you come into it?
Yeah, pretty much as a little kid, started off with things like Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, the great Albert George series. And then moved on. You know, I was lucky enough to be in the generation where Goosebumps premiered. I read all those when I was a little kid.
Nice.
And then, you know, I read my first Stephen King book, I think was Salem's Lot. I think I read that at way too young of an age.
Yeah, we all did.
Terrified by that one. Yeah. I was like 11 or 12 when I picked that up. I can't remember exactly. But yeah, I just kind of, you know, just kept growing with horror basically since I was pretty small.
Yeah.
I think it's funny to say that because, and I did, this just occurred to me, everyone always says, you know, I read Stephen King too young. Yeah. But I really think maybe that is when we should be reading Stephen King, you know, at that young, impressionable age.
Yeah, you know, you're not wrong. And I think it has a greater impact because who knows if it would have scared me as much if I had read it later on. As it did when I wrote it at such a young age, and it definitely sticks with you because I still remember exactly where I was when I was reading that book. I remember throwing the book aside when I got to that scene, that famous scene with the boy outside the window, and you know, I just remember being terrified by it, and definitely has left its mark.
It is. It's the formative years. And you, like, I can still remember, I think it was probably my first Stephen King book. And I can remember where I was when I was reading that book. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Now your book is set in two different timelines. And I was kind of curious as a writer, did you run into any issues with the two separate timelines? Was it smooth sailing for you? Did you have to go back and correct things? How does that work?
Yeah. Well, actually I had written the early timeline first. Takes place in 1986. And I had actually, to be honest, had written that before Sisters of the Lost Nation. I had written that as its own separate novel. And then you know, other things happened, and I ended up writing Sisters. And then when we were looking towards the follow-up, I had submitted that early timeline from Indian Burial Ground, and it wasn't called Indian Burial Ground back then. It was actually Gators Don't Chew, which is part of it.
Oh man, I like that's a good
that's
one.
A good
They're
one.
Both good ones. They're both
yeah,
good.
I love that title, but I think Indian Burial Ground works really well though.
Too. A little more evocative.
But yeah. So then, when I submitted that early timeline as a proposal for the next book, my editor read it and she said she loved it, but she didn't think the story was complete. And she said, you know, I think we need another timeline here, something in the present, something that will bring those things from the past back. And so that's when I really started thinking about the other characters and, you know, what might be going on in their lives and what's happening on this reservation. And of course I had Sisters of the Lost Nation to draw from as well, because there was kind of a wealth of things going on within that book that I wanted to expand upon that I just couldn't do all in one novel. So I brought back one of the characters from that, or a couple of the characters from Sisters of the Lost Nation, was able to give them a greater timeline. And things just kind of clicked and fell into place really easily. It wasn't too much of a struggle. I didn't have to make too many changes to the old timeline.
That's great.
And it just worked out really well. And I was really happy with it. And, you know, even my editor said, you know, that can be really tough to do, but you pulled it together pretty well. So I was feeling good about it.
That's awesome. Yeah, it doesn't always work out from people we've talked to.
Yeah, no, it doesn't always, but I thought it worked really well in this book. All right, Nick, it's time now for our segment we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions, which we find out just a little bit more about you. So buckle up, strap in, and wait, you can take your time with them, but here we go. Nick, what is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Oh, geez. I haven't had much time for TV lately. I can't remember what I was watching. It's like when you're at a party and they ask you to name a song to play and you can't think of the music. Like, what's music?
That's true.
You know, I watch a lot of true crime television.
Oh, do you watch true crime? You a big true crime guy?
Yeah, I watched... What did I watch? I watched a documentary series about something. I can't remember what it was. Man, I'm trying to complete blank.
I think we are learning that Nick Medina is not a TV watcher.
Do you watch TV guy.
Are you a sports guy?
I do like TV. I just haven't had a ton of time lately. I do like sports as well, but everything that's been going on, I haven't been following anything lately at all. I've been so wrapped up in just writing and editing and
for you.
Busy man. He's a busy,
right
busy man.
Traveling. I just got back to New York. I'm going to Arizona this weekend, so there's like so much going on.
Huh.
I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. Don't be sorry for not watching TV.
Yeah, exactly. You shouldn't have to apologize for that.
I'll get the other five, I promise.
Okay.
All right.
What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Probably, first off the top of my head, and it's not horror, maybe Hogwarts. That's another
one.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to see that too.
Me too. Yeah. We're right there with you.
Yeah, I think that would be fun to be... to be a wizard, maybe have some magical powers, be able to wave a wand and do what you want. I guess that's horror though too, you know. You can kill someone with a wave of a wand.
Yeah, I'd like to see the Whomping Willow. I want to see all that. Yeah.
How horrific is that?
Yeah, get that invisibility cloak for sure.
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Do some great things with that too.
Nick, how about this? Give us one of your favorite movies of all time.
I really love The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, yeah.
Came out in the late 90s. That one, more of a mystery thriller, I think, based on a book by Patricia Highsmith, one of the absolute greatest mystery writers. I always love that movie. And every time I watch it, I find something that I didn't notice before. It's so nuanced, and there's so many little things in there. And it's also just a really beautiful film.
It's gorgeous.
Filmed in Italy, and it's really, really well done.
Yeah, that's a good one. I haven't thought of that movie in a long time. Very stylish movie. How about one of your favorite books?
Well, as I've been preparing for the release of Indian Burial Ground, I've gone back and I've been doing my homework, so to speak, and watching and reading everything that incorporates an Indian Burial Ground. So I know we were just talking about Stephen King, and I just reread Pet Cemetery.
What is that book? That book
one of the greatest Indian burial ground books.
Absolutely.
And as I was rereading it, I just kept thinking to myself, this might be one of the, or the best horror novel. I mean, it's so good. It's so dark, so twisted. It is, you know, disgustingly horrific subject matter when you think about it.
Yeah.
It is, you know, deliciously horrible, and I thoroughly enjoyed rereading it.
I recently reread that book too, Nick, and I am right there with you. Boy, that is so, so creepy.
Yeah, so dark.
Yeah.
So good, yeah.
How about this, Nick? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
I don't know if I've even ever done karaoke. I might have done it once as a kid, so not really.
I'm
really going to do it. I'm a big rock and roll fan. Maybe okay. Something by the Stones, maybe Satisfaction. That's a great standard.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Like that.
Oh, that's a good
maybe
one.
Maybe not terribly difficult to sing.
That's
I don't
true.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get halfway through it and learn if it was hard or not.
That's true. I would mess it up no matter what.
Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
I'm currently reading a book that is going to be published later this year. It's called Bone Picker, or at least that's the title they have right now. It might get changed, but it's written by a woman named Devin Mihisua, if I'm saying that correctly, I hope. And it's a collection of Native American horror stories, short stories. And I'm about halfway through it right now, and I'm really digging it. It's really good, really creepy, really dark as well. And I can't remember the publisher, but it should be out later this year, I think.
Awesome.
That's a good one.
Sounds great. Well, Nick, listen, absolutely loved your book, Indian Burial Ground, and really appreciate you spending some time chatting with us.
Hey, I was looking forward to talking to you. Thank you so much for having me on here.
Of course.
I really appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks Take so care. Much.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
The Inside Flap.
Alrighty, thank you so much to Nick Medina and Dexter and that lady at the Denver Botanic Gardens shaking her fists up in the air with glee.
Wow.
Are you excited for the big event?
I don't know what to make of it.
I don't know. Anyway, check out Nick Medina's new book and the title of that one, and it's out now, Indian Burial Ground. My name is Dave Medicus. See ya.
Adios.
Aren't you excited about the big event?